Meeting to order at 9:33 or so. Can we get a roll call? Correct?
Andrew Everett.
Here.
Peter Leeds.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
David Swartz.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Item 3 is call to the public, and I see that we do have a member of the public. However, we spoke on the way in, and do you have anything for the committee at all?
I do not. My name is Ron Riley, and I am currently pursuing certification as a home inspector. And while I await that, I figured I'd at least make use of the time by trying to stay close to what's going on in the industry. And I figured anything that the committee was bringing up was probably the latest and greatest that the industry may have encountered.
Welcome.
Outstanding. Thanks for being here. Okay. So, agenda item number 4 is adoption of the minutes. Let's see. Was there a last minute change to those?
There was just a slight change. Just got reviewed and I made some minor modifications to it.
Okay. Does everybody like this format? I thought it was very detailed this time and everything.
So you like that?
Is
or
that
do
good?
You want it? It's up to you guys. If you want it briefer, we can make it more brief.
I think it probably helps, you know, recall later if the more detailed.
Okay.
As long as we're always in agreement that it's accurate. You know, the more detail, if it's inaccurate, is trouble, I think. So that being broad is probably less propensity for that. I didn't really spot anything that was a problem on there, but if everybody wants to review that one more time.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve minutes.
I'll second that.
Okay. Do we have any discussion or do you want to continue review?
I think it looks.
Okay.
I have a hard time remembering, you know, a couple months ago, but
sure.
It just sounds about right.
I'm just checking to be sure that they spelled Mr. Swartz's name right.
That's true. That's always our dilemma. Okay. All those in favor of approval of the minutes from November 14th of 2017, say aye.
Aye.
I'll abstain.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Motion passes. Minutes are approved. Agenda item number 5 is review, discussion, and possible action on the following. So A is legislative updates.
The home inspector bill that the, is it ASHI that's sponsoring it, or is it?
We actually have a coalition. It's
okay.
Called the Arizona Home Inspector Coalition.
So that bill has dropped, and they have Senator Kavanaugh sponsoring it, which is great.
Yeah.
Is he now the head of appropriations as well?
Yeah, chair of appropriations and the government. So
yeah, he's solid.
Yeah.
And we have a bill number.
We do.
Yep.
I think it's 1045.
1045.
SB 1045.
And what?
Signed to Commerce.
Yep. So it's moving. I mean, that's the good thing about having a strong sponsor, is the bill will be heard.
Right.
And he's very much in favor, being a former police officer, of simplifying registration and background checks. So that's the intent of this bill, is to make the applicants obtain a clearance card through DPS rather than submit just one fingerprint card upon application. And what I recommended that Rory include and see if Kavanaugh was okay with was on renewal, that those who have already been licensed obtain a clearance card, and they would be good for 6 years. Also, what the bill does is increase the registration from 1 year to 2 years. So rather than a 1 year registration, you would have a 2 year registration if the bill passes.
Oh,
what's the feedback?
That's okay. I
yep.
thought there was feedback that was trouble with the agency in some way.
No.
To go to it. Oh, I must have misread that. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Peter.
What's your feedback from the industry? Have you talked to these guys about all these old home inspectors now having to go get a fingerprint card?
Today is the first I really recognize that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So then if that occurs and I think it's good in the sense that it be redone every 6 years. If felonies arise, the agency gets wind of it. So do we have any precedent for felonies arising in those terms, and how does the agency deal with that?
Well, we have precedent with the other professions, and the way we find out is either they disclose it on their renewal application, or what we're doing internally is running a public records check through a database we call LexisNexis that will, it's pretty much accurate, over 95% I would say, and then if they've answered no on their renewal that they haven't been arrested or convicted of a crime, and we find out yes you have, we will open a complaint that includes not just an inquiry into the actual crime, but the good moral character allegation of you lied to the board will be reviewed as well, and enforcement has handled.
So the ASHI people don't know this yet, right? I'm just curious as to what kind of screaming and hollering you're going to have to put up with about that. Yeah, you know, guys that have been certified for 17 years or 15 years that haven't never had to go through that except for the first time. Now we're going to make them do it every 6 months or 6 years. So I'm all for it, but I just expect that there's going to be some horrible.
Knowing
home inspectors.
We basically double check anyway, so we're gonna have found out that Peter had a.
No. It's not a matter of whether they did something wrong. It's a matter of they have to go out of their way now to get a finger.
But it's pretty easy, wasn't it?
What are the logistics of that?
The alarm people. I think it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
You go to a facility or.
You go online. You pull out your app online, and you make a reservation to get electronic fingerprints. You go there, you put your hand on the little screen, unless you're me and you won't print on a screen.
But,
and then it just shoots it right through to DPS. DPS runs it, and people are getting their cards within a week.
No more ink?
No.
No ink.
Photocopy.
That's why we're mortal. Do you know that?
Are there
the
facilities throughout the state?
Yeah.
Throughout the state.
Simple.
Okay.
We had, the LR people have loved it. It's just
and the cost was nominal, 65 or something like that? Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm all for it, but I just suspect a big...
Well, there's people that kind of whine about everything,
right.
I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you know, we're
spending the money. We had to raise a bunch of money to go to the legislature and hire a lobbyist and all that. And so that was in response to everybody yelling how long it takes to get a license. And so, you know, I don't know who's louder or more in numbers.
I just want to be there when they find out. That's all.
Well, we'll see. I don't know that Kavanaugh has accepted the proposed amendment. But
yeah, Rory hasn't reported that.
That's an amendment?
It would be, because the bill dropped without that, and so he would have to agree to amend it. And
that stems from, is that how the alarm folks did it as well?
Yes.
Okay. And that's advisable because we... want to get them into the cycle. There shouldn't be a group that had one fingerprint check and never again.
Right.
We want to include everybody in the fold.
Right, and that's the way professionals are being treated at other boards that require fingerprinting. You do have to renew. It's not something that you just do once and then you can forget about.
Seems logical to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you...
Without it, you kind of have people get licensed, and for 6 years they're covered, and then they're not. That's also kind of odd.
Yeah, so
either you're covered or you're not covered.
Right. Do you intend to be at the hearings in that?
Sure.
If you could speak to that, maybe that's not my wheelhouse in terms of how the agency's experience or the other state.
Yep, Patty and I love going to the
I bet you do.
We're going to need to know where to go online to fill out that application.
Okay, I'll email you what you do. It's very simple. You just.
I mean, everyone's gonna.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll make sure.
Well, yeah. Once a law. But
yeah. We put out warnings to the alarm industry, and if they can get it.
I don't know.
And I don't
know. Haven't been on ASHI meeting.
I don't know who's willing to chime in to the committee and say that you're in favor, but anybody who is, we'd love to have that. So SB 1045.
Got
Peter.
You need a letter. Okay, not a problem.
And anybody else? I don't know if it's appropriate for anybody in the agency.
Do you
want to
speak to any of the other bills?
Nothing that really impacts them. SB
1045.
I keep an eye on all the bills that get dropped. So if there's anything of concern, I make the board aware of it. There are some things that are watched, but nothing that has anything to do with home inspectors.
Okay. Session started on Monday, and I don't know if you heard the governor's state of the state. It was brief this year, but he did call the cosmetology board bullies because they were abiding by their statute when they heard that a young student was giving free haircuts to homeless people in Tucson. They were a little concerned because you have to be licensed to give haircuts even if they're free, and part of that has to do with the cleanliness issue, and this is a population that isn't clean, and they wanted to make sure, you know, as a student, he understood that you have to clean your scissors and combs and things like that. So that student complained to the governor last year, and the governor stepped in and basically told the cosmetology board that despite the fact their statute said they have the authority to impose a civil penalty on this young man, that they couldn't or shouldn't do it. And so he had that young person there and called the board bullies, and yeah, so it'll be an interesting session, I think.
Just don't be a bully, you guys.
Right. I know. Well, it's going to be hard for me.
It doesn't work for us because our rules are only applied to paid home inspectors.
That's true. That's true. Safe. So we're set.
We can't. Okay. We can
at
give
least
more.
In our realm.
We can give more.
Yeah.
I had a question as it relates to kind of the fingerprint scenario, and then in general behavior towards folks who are convicted of felonies. And when that occurs, so I know it's case by case, and of course there's some convictions that are extremely fearful to allow them to be in people's homes as a home inspector and get that kind of in. So with respect to that, does the agency get the information, and do they look at felonies that are pled to be mm-hmm. less severe? Mm-hmm. So you get the information about what the original crime
yes.
was? Okay. And
yes.
consider that.
Right. And this profession actually has that 5-year felony bar.
Right.
Which is...
solid.
Yeah. So no one who hasn't had an absolute discharge from any final order with a felony conviction will be registered.
Okay. Very good.
And
thank
they
you.
Also have them, the person that has the felony, you're supposed to write out, you know, and explain it. That helps the board, because sometimes, you know, you'll see something and you're like, oh, this is terrible. And then when you read about it, you're like, well, this was nothing. You know, it was a prank. I mean, sometimes it'll be like grand theft, and it's like, you know, one kid stole the tires off another kid's car as a prank, you know, and gave them back, and, you know, they filed charges. And so sometimes you read these things and you're like, okay, someone was a little overzealous here.
Yeah.
You know,
some
law enforcement.
Something.
Yeah, you know, and that's usually that's another one. They'll be like, oh, I got a public defender and they told me it would be easier to just plead guilty, right. Not knowing how that was going to affect them, you
down
know,
their
down their down
yeah.
their life.
Right.
We bring
so.
All felonies before the board members so that they can review the documentation we've received, including any explanations that an applicant may have made, and we invite the applicant to come in to answer questions board members may have before they decide to issue a license. On some misdemeanors, we feel pretty confident, you know, knowing how the board will rule, that we can go ahead and grant if it's an old misdemeanor. But if there's ever any question, we always bring those cases before the board.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions on that matter? All right. That requires no action. So agenda item 5B is rules updates.
Can I ask a question on these rules? How far down this line are they?
We're at the point now, we're in publication, actually.
Can we make changes before it's published?
Corrections or a...
It's already been published.
It's published.
Wordsmithing.
You can comment
on our 430-102, number one, in the home inspector definitions, we do have a small mistake.
We can fix those.
Oh, good.
Oh, thank you. Did you, so, I used to work in the engineering field when I was very young, and I can remember that I would look at something for so long that I lost the ability to catch minor errors.
The very end.
And it's an oddity that I never, you know, that occurs. I don't know if it has a name or it's probably a syndrome, and I should submit and try and get
some... I agree. ADA accommodation.
Yeah. I should get help. But I'm
very... Need a service animal, service doctor or something, service penguin.
Exactly. But just knowing that, I actually kind of printed our original, what we wanted that document to represent. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful that you did you're very good and very detailed.
I just skimmed it.
This is the original, like, what we had hoped for in the rules.
Yeah, and they did this. They pulled out all those definitions.
And that's in the back. So what that was supposed to be is back in here, like one of the last two pages.
Okay, but if I can just let's go to R430-101, home inspector definitions, number one. It reads nicely until we get to the very last three words that say peer review period when we're talking about parallel inspection. So that should read on number one, the applicant shall not perform any fee-paid home inspections during this parallel inspection period, not peer review period.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And when it goes to final, if it's just a minor correction, it doesn't change the intent.
And David, you want me to review this?
Would you do like a full review, please?
Yeah.
I had a death in the family, right? Too, and I had my, and then I had my wife review a document that was an important one, and she caught something that was small, but like one word that was critically important that I'm missing. So I just don't feel super capable at the moment, and this document's long and drawn out.
Okay.
And this hasn't went through public comment yet?
It's in the public comment period.
Oh.
So
make a comment as the public.
We gave it to you wrong, actually, because even here,
really,
it says peer review period when it should have said parallel inspection period. So we'll take the blame on it, but somebody has to do it.
Yep.
Somebody has to fix it. But I'll review these, David, for the next meeting.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So those last two documents are a set of replacement sections.
Well, I'll tell the board about it.
Here's red if you want it or whatever.
No, I'm good.
Okay. Thank you so much. And then that'll help me a ton. So is there anything else we need to know about the rules? What is the projected timing for, like...
Well, it was published by Secretary of State on December 22nd, and we have 30 days, so that's where we are now. We're in the comment period, and we will consider this a comment, bring it before the board, and tell them we're going to make this, it's a clerical correction, but it will still go before the board so the members understand. And then after the comment period ends, we can make the corrections and send the whole packet over to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. And when it's sent over there, it has to include some extra work from us in creation of an economic impact statement so that we can tell the Governor's Committee that this rules package will either have a minimal economic impact or a more serious economic impact, and then explain why we should go ahead with it. And they will have an opportunity to review the rules and make their own comments that we need to respond to. And then ultimately it's placed on their agenda because they're a board or committee as well. And we go in and can answer questions about the rules, and hopefully they go ahead and approve them. And then send the paperwork and all that over to Secretary of State so they're official. Right.
Sweet. So that's something we can be at.
Yeah. Yep, so we're still probably some months away from them being published, but I'm confident it will happen in 2018.
Well, and is there still a moratorium and all that?
There is, but we had an exemption, so.
So it's a minor miracle, but it did happen. Good. We'll take
all the minor miracles.
We'll take all the good fortune we can get. All right, outstanding. Anything else on the rules?
Can we keep it on the agenda since I'm going to be reviewing this?
Yeah.
Be sure that it follows with
any clerical type corrections, can Peter just get that to you without the committee being involved with regard to motions and all that? Great.
And Patrice?
Sure.
So if you could work behind the scenes, that would be awesome. So 5B, I guess we need 5A to stay on as well. All right, agenda item
revision. That's me. All right, I gave everybody a sheet of what I did. Okay, we have a severity.
Nice paper, by the way.
She's kind of wealthy. He's one of those.
We buy upgraded paper. The I went about this from a whole different direction. The original severity rating form was very convoluted even to me, and every time I opened my eyes and tried to determine between a 3 and a 4 or a 2 and a 3, I just glazed over, all right? Because there's so much interlapping in the definition. So what I did was I attacked it from a specific parameter, okay? First off, we have clerical errors, and we all know what those are, where the guy just made a stupid mistake on his report, didn't amount to anything, and or on his agreement, right? For instance, some of these agreements come in where there's only the seller, only the buyer, the client signing. There's no agreement unless both parties are signing. It's ridiculous. So those stupid things would be a one. And then I put priorities. I put priority, the lowest priority on the type or the description of a component. The second lowest priority would be number 3 on the observation, the condition of a component. And then I did systems and components, an error or omission in the description or the observation if it results in an allegation, so I put a high priority on the allegation. So in essence, the lowest priority in the rating would be a clerical error, the second would be a description of a system such as the description of the roof being a tile, the type, okay? And then what's very important is the condition of these things, not the description of them. So I put that in as number 3 in the components and the system or component. And then the allegation, we're always in here because of an allegation. So I put the top priority on an allegation of a component first and then a system second. And the difference between that would be, say for instance, your ductwork in the attic was broken. Okay, and they weren't getting air to 2 or 3 of the rooms. That, in my opinion, if it became substantiated that it was visible at the time of the inspection, would be a number 4. Hmm. Whereas if the whole furnace wasn't working and therefore none of the systems were operable, that would be, none of the components were operable, rather, that to me would be a number 5. And both of them would be dependent upon whether or not they result in a complaint or an allegation. I want to take the 4s and the 5s, in essence, out of the deficiencies of the report and keep them in the allegations, deficiencies and allegations combined. So that was my approach. I hope it's self-explanatory.
Well, it is, but here's an issue I have with this.
Okay, good.
Okay, let's say you have a number. Let's say you have a number 4.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say the component had an error. But let's say it was the kitchen cabinet doors don't operate correctly. Okay, let's say you also have a component that stair rail, you know, was missing. The stair rail, you know, or balcony railing was missing or loose or damaged or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time putting the same weight on both of those things because one is a cosmetic, who cares?
Right.
And the other one is a life safety thing.
Well, I thought about that. And therefore, I figured that the committee would have the option. God bless you. The committee would have the option to take that component, for instance, add a number 4 and move it back to number 2 that says the type was, of a system or a component was not addressed or was incorrectly addressed. And giving the committee the ability to say, okay, it was in the allegation, but it's minor, so let's move it back to a number two, because that describes it also. So with, yeah.
And I think that would work. I don't know, maybe you want to make a thing that, you know, a four or five would be,
well,
you know, if it's a life safety thing, it should be a four or five, no matter what. Even if it wasn't part of the allegation or something, you guys find it in the EAC, you know, you're like reading through the guy's report and, you know, the homeowner didn't allegate anything, but you read through it and oh my God, you know, they didn't have a, you know, the chimney for the, you know, gas water heater was venting into the attic or something. It's like, well, that's bad.
Right.
You know, and maybe the homeowner didn't know, but you saw it in the report or in the photos in the report and be like, okay, this is a very serious issue. Mm-hmm. I understand the thing
and,
with this.
And in which case, I think that the committee should have the option to be able to move it out of a two and up to a four.
Right.
You see?
And I believe
this,
it, too.
This is just a guideline.
Just kind of a general guideline.
We need a guideline that makes these guys look at the right ones. See? So, for instance, if it was the railing, okay, but there was no complaint against the railing up on the balcony, everyone will start looking at number two for the component. Okay, but then because of its safety aspect, they could vote to make it a number four.
They look at three.
Three. Okay, they would look at three, and because of its seriousness or safety issue, move it to a four. But they're not looking through the whole form trying to figure out, well, where would this fit? You see what I'm saying?
But they're going to read this and think that, oh, it's not part of the complaints.
Well, if we let them know that they have the option to move things up and down on there.
So you need an intro paragraph, perhaps?
Which we do anyway.
Well, that's the big thing. I mean, if you know, if you one of you two guys isn't in the EAC,
well,
you know, if you get a whole random, people that don't understand this, they read through this and they're like, okay, well, you know, they might think, well, these are my only options I have, dependent, you know, just stick something in one of these things.
I can write in a paragraph that explains that they have the option to move.
Yeah. Okay. And the life safety things are, you know, and I think if we kind of did something like that, it would probably, you know, this would be somewhat of a guideline. I just don't want someone that wasn't in this meeting to read through this and go, okay, well, we're stuck with these five things.
Right.
Doesn't matter what it is. You know, we're putting this one at five. You know, a homeowner might think something is very critical, like cabinet drawers or something, and you'd be like, oh my, that's a four. But really, I mean, in all reality, it's like, okay.
You don't know my wife.
Yeah.
Cabinet drawers are critical.
Could we also hear from Doug, just as a person dealing?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My suggestion would be entertain the possibility of adding a C to five to address life safety issues that were deficiencies, not part of the allegation.
That's a good way to go about it.
The other consideration is, in the example, like let's say, and this has happened before, where, see, we're not going to know because we're not going to the property, but on occasion the report will see a photograph, and they'll, like say it is a photo of the attic, and there's a picture of the gas flue that is just venting in the attic or something. We as a committee have added a new allegation right then and there in the committee meeting. So in that case, it would be resulting in a complaint or allegation in a sense.
No,
not from the client, but from us.
The committee. But those are, we call those deficiencies, though.
You're seeing a picture in the report of the flue gas?
Yeah, but they're still considered in the deficiency. The allegation comes from somebody from outside the building. The deficiencies come from inside the building. So that would be the difference. It would still be a deficiency.
Well, I guess meetings I've been in, I've handled it differently. In the olden days, too, now it's kind of handled by staff.
Well, you had an allegation of four things that the home inspector did that they're being complained against. And then you run into a bad situation during the meeting. Do you throw it into the allegations or do you throw it into the deficiencies?
Yeah, deficiencies actually have the word report attached to them in my historic, you know.
Yeah, but we've always thrown it into the deficiencies. We never changed the initial allegations. Those are pretty much set in stone.
Why do you believe that?
Because that's the complaint. The allegations come directly out of the complaint.
Okay. I don't know. It would be a staff matter
and
now.
Something that we saw during the meeting would go into the report deficiencies.
I always believe the report deficiencies should be their own from the review of the report, and anything that the client or that we spotted that are substantive matters to life safety and things like that belong up above, not buried in some report minor deficiency.
Okay.
That's how I've handled
looking
it.
We're looking at it differently, so we're going to need to have that looked at.
Yeah, and you guys handle all the writings now of
reports. Yeah, but I do think that it's going to be confusing to the EAC people that they think they're going to be limited if it's not part of the original complaint allegations that we received.
I agree.
That if it's and it exists as a deficiency, they're not going to be allowed to use a 405. That's just what I think.
Yeah, unless we add a C into that.
Yeah.
Okay, and when you were talking about adding C for safety or anything that's not part of the allegation, that can be written in as a C in both number 4 and number 5 to handle it.
Right, I think it should. Okay. The other thing you could do if you didn't want to add a C is you could say, and it's already bolded, resulting in a complaint or allegation or is a matter discovered during the interview or whatever. Because we've also had testimony come out from the alleger where we have a different angle now. Whoa, you're describing something that's very unsafe. You don't realize it. That's very unsafe. Mm-hmm. Now we got to get to the bottom of that. And it's not part of their allegations because they don't know. They're just a homeowner.
I can go both ways and bring back two samples.
Yeah. Well, I think coming to your point, it's exactly right. A homeowner doesn't know what's critical and what's not critical.
Right.
You know, something they think is awful, everyone else looks at it like, okay.
Right.
And something they think is nothing could actually be a very serious thing that
right. They
don't know.
It happens all
so
the time.
We're talking about just fleshing this out a little bit more.
I'm hoping.
Do you feel it would be important to include, like, hypotheticals, such as
that's how we got messed
Jason
up on the other.
Yeah. Okay.
Then you start talking about HVAC, and you start talking about electric, and all sorts of things, and that's what made me fog out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and I think if, you know, since the EACs have a staff member in it,
right. You
know, when you guys are discussing, if it's not someone that's, you know, done this a lot, staff can say, okay, well, you know, here's a general thing, but, you know, if you guys feel there's something that's critical or life safety or something like that, you know, don't feel that you have to comply exactly with what this is.
I think it's super amazing and helpful because without this document, most folks don't know how to process all this. So this is a very important document.
Yeah, I think just put little tweaks and just make sure that staff lets people know that they have fluid to go up and down
as long as they justify
right.
What if we tried a little bit of wordsmithing on that the bolded section? If we fix it in one place, it would apply to all. What if it said resulting in a complaint / allegation or is discovered to be a significant deficiency during the process, or whatever you would call the process.
I like that, except I think I can write it that way so you can see it, but I think it should go into a C category. I really do.
Okay, either way.
Because we're talking about the type and condition of a component, for instance, not addressed properly, resulting in an allegation, no recommendation for remedy resulting in allegation, or a safety or major adverse condition missed, not resulting in an allegation, but the guys think it's enough to give it a 4 or 5. I can make that work in the number C.
Okay, I'm good with that. Would you be willing to like work together with me on that?
Sure.
Maybe? Because this is the first time I've seen this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
All right, you're awesome. So
okay.
We'll maybe bring this back.
Yep.
So this will be 5C.
And then a paragraph maybe at the top that just advises these guys that they do have the ability to use this as a guideline, but to move between the numbers. Okay?
Good thought.
And I think that we might have it. But my question is, the approach is better for clerical component, for clerical, then type, then observation, and then big trouble.
I like that.
All right? Okay.
Is there precedent for automatically providing a provision where they know that if there's injuries, because we've done some where people are bringing in x-rays of injuries of falls downstairs and stuff. Does that cause it, does the committee get that right every time, or do we all know, or do we need to say that if injury occurs, or I guess there's other cases we've had them say, you know, we lost our home because we just can't afford this repair. That's disastrous as well. That probably just gets sorted out in the process,
yeah,
rather than needing to be specified.
No, yeah, I think.
Yeah.
If you guys listen to someone that lost their home because it was completely falling apart,
yeah,
that's probably a five.
Yeah. If you believe they're being truthful.
Right, well,
that is the caveat.
That's the whole thing.
Okay, outstanding work. Thank you so much, Peter, for getting that ball rolling. And is the new process utilizing staff to do all, everything's working great, right? Better?
So far, I mean, the feedback's pretty good.
Good.
Staff is becoming more comfortable running the meetings or facilitating the meetings. So.
How do the board members feel about it? Do you think you're getting enough information, accurate reports, so that you can make an informed decision on a...
Yeah, I think so. I like that there's more of a form now. It's not just one person writes one thing and one person writes another, and you never, you know, at least now it's, you know, very precise and very scripted, so you kind of know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
How have you liked being part of the process? I know you've done some.
I enjoy not being the chairman of the team.
Less pressure.
Oh, yeah. Less work. Less homework.
Good.
All right. But, I think it's working great. I've done it with Sean, I've done it with Doug, and they move very smooth.
Good. Well, you know, we want to be respectful of people's time, given volunteer efforts, and make sure we get the most out of the time that is donated here, so.
Yeah. We're paid.
$30, I know.
When I do an assessment, I take the allegation, and I still do my thing to the allegation.
Okay.
And then I use the form that Doug created for the report review.
Excellent.
And put the two together at the end and ship it out.
Great.
Because the person who's... The form doesn't really work for to get alleges to understand that they're wrong. Okay? It's easier for me to actually lay it out step by step.
Good.
But on the report format, report writing, the checklist is excellent.
Great.
I guess my only thing with respect to time on some of those is it's really important to make sure the alleger knows that when we have report deficiencies, because I just did one that had a gazillion, the report was probably the worst I've ever seen, and I've done a lot of reviews.
Wow.
But just that they either admit to those just right up front, so they walk in the room and they're admitting to 1 through 20, however, let's talk about number 25, because they arrive and they don't even have the report. Oh, you know, I didn't look at that. And it's like, that can take forever to sort through. So as it relates to report deficiencies, in order to benefit the time consideration, it's really important to have them knowledgeable that they have to come and fess up to what they missed and isolate which ones and bring the evidence of how you met the standard.
We encourage them to do
that. We try to get them to, we send them a checklist.
Yeah.
And, you know, identifying your report where this is on the checklist so he is prepared, and it's easier for you guys, but they don't know.
Doesn't. It's very rare it happens in my experience.
Well, what Judge Judy would say is, where did you think you were going this morning?
I'm the boss, applesauce.
You guys. Does the new process either equal or better the chances of getting a consent agreement signed?
That's difficult to say, I think, at this point in time.
Doesn't feel like it's worsening it or anything, right?
No.
Good.
Which I have a question about, too. When I was reading through the rules, I noticed that you give them the opportunity to make an agreement even before an EAC committee meeting, even if one is recommended. Is that true? because I like that. Anything to say, keep us out of EAC meetings would be wonderful.
Rarely happens. I can't say it's never happened, mm-hmm.
But your communication to those people actually does give them that opportunity, right? Once the assessment comes back, you give them the opportunity to deal?
Well, the reason for providing them with the assessment is so that they're prepared to deal with the EAC committee. I can't think of an instance where we've settled a case.
Yeah, but I was reading through the rules. I was reading through the rules, and I said, well, I didn't know they did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, someone could voluntarily surrender their certification or their registration at any point after an investigation has been opened, really at any time.
Does that close it?
It can. I mean, for administrative resources is a justification for closing. It just has to be accepted at the, you know, the board members have to agree.
Right.
And many times the board members will say, well, is this the best resolution or, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it might be victims here that he's running away from.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If somebody chooses to surrender, what the board can do is close it rather than dismiss it. So if the person gets their license back, they can't use the surrender to get around having that investigation go on.
Or you can surrender and then come back the next month and
fill
out an application to reapply.
Yeah. Really?
Yes, we have. Not for a home inspector.
Wow.
Yes.
Surveyor. It must be a surveyor.
No, it was an engineer.
Engineers, you know how they are.
Bump the system.
Finding a way. Okay, thank you, everyone. Any other discussion on that?
No, I'll have it next meeting. Keep it on the agenda.
We will. Thank you. All right, agenda item 5D is possible replacement of committee member Randy West. Does that say possible for a reason?
It's just the language I wrote in.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure there isn't something new.
Did Randy quit on us?
Yeah.
Randy indicated he needed to resign, so now we have a vacancy, and that's why you're considering three letters of interest to find a qualified replacement.
And I expected a fourth applicant. However, I texted him and emailed him and never received anything. So
yeah.
He kind of came about at the last hour. So,
can we discuss these gentlemen?
Yes, please.
Of course.
I've got to slide down and see who they are.
So before you start discussing, I just wanted to draw your attention to the governing statute in this instance, mm-hmm. 32.111, Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee. The committee has to have three home inspectors on it, one of whom is a resident of a county with a population of 400,000 persons or less, appointed by the board from a list of names any home inspector organization provides if the home inspector organization meets various following criteria. So that's assuming that the organization, the association, has submitted the names, and that association has to have at least 40 members who are actively engaged in the practice of home inspection. They hold regular elections, they publish laws or bylaws, maintain codes of ethics, and then obviously two of the members on the committee have to be from the board itself.
Okay, so as it relates to these three folks we're looking at, that is where they were sourced from, is Arizona ASHI, and they meet all those requirements. The fourth person, I don't know his, and he's not here to review, but he had some sort of rift with that organization, and I don't know the details of that.
Well,
are we okay with the 400,000 or the smaller community?
So I wanted to point out,
we have Tucson, Scottsdale, and Phoenix.
I wanted to point out, this is a secret, so not really. You don't have to turn the recording off.
Not anymore.
I have two residences, and I actually spend the majority of the time at a residence in Coconino County. I behave like I'm Phoenix guy, but I can work from a computer. I don't do inspections in the field because I'm a multi-inspector firm now. So.
Cool. Well, subsection B says we can appoint from a recommended organizational list or from others having the necessary qualifications. So, but we still have to appoint somebody from a county with a population of 400,000 or less.
Can I not replace that requirement?
Could. Yeah, we could propose that you fill that slot and then propose one or any number of these gentlemen fill the other position.
Okay. That's what I would propose. The other thing, just if I could speak to these folks, because I know them all very well. Brick is from Tucson, and he is incredibly, he's probably of everyone, he is the longest-term home inspector in the state. He now is the president of Arizona ASHI, the local chapter. Very smart, very well-versed and all that. Very busy, though, which actually, probably you could say that about everyone, that they're all busy, and I'm always considering that because we need people who are smart,
right,
willing, and able, and,
right,
and reliable.
He volunteers to review applications pretty regularly, so.
Right, right. He's a little newer to the EAC process in that.
Okay.
Paul Sterren, I've worked with a very long time. He has probably the most stellar, in my opinion, resume, and I know him to be incredibly qualified. And then Tony Hecht is a local home inspector in the East Valley, and he is a former president of the local chapter, Arizona ASHI, and he has a good amount of experience as well. Let's see. I believe that Brick has also served nationally on the board of directors, or maybe not. No. So Paul has served on the national ASHI board of directors, and Paul has also served on the board of directors and is the president of the examination board for professional home inspectors, which administers the national exam that most states recognize for home inspection licensing. So if you wanted to lay it out, Paul has probably the strongest resume, in my opinion. And then Brick is in Tucson, which could be a barrier in terms of just the drive time and all of that. As I talked to them about putting in their hat, I was trying to gauge their actual interest as opposed to their just willingness to succumb to my coercion. And you know, everybody's busy and all that. There are some advantages to Phoenix folks because it's so much easier to be
right.
in attendance. So for whatever that's worth, that's kind of the information and insight I would provide.
My one comment, because I put a lot of weight on what you all think, but just for the record, it does look like Brick was on the board of the National from 2003 to 2006.
Oh, outstanding.
Just so
Where
we're
is
clear.
That?
I'm looking on page 41, the CV.
Board of Directors, ASHI National. My apologies, he did. Okay, so that's good. That's an important position, and he's solid. Brick is extremely solid. I don't think Tony has he?
I'm just happy that they're all 38 numbers. That
exactly.
puts them all the way back to the beginning, and they're not in trouble, which means that we got
Did
three good
checked?
Candidates here.
Did we run? We would know if these guys...
Well, I know Tony's an EAC member.
Okay.
And Brick is an EAC
right.
member. The other individual I don't know.
Now, Paul was here, Paul Sterren was here for the first 4 years. He sat on every one of the Rules and Standards Committees as a public member. So he's been with the development and had a lot of input in the development of the program through 2005, 6, and 7, all the way from 2002 or so. He from 2000, actually, once we actually put together. So he's very familiar with what's going on here. And if I had my choice of all three, knowing all three, I think Paul Starin would be my first choice.
Really?
Because he's easy to deal with. He's opinionated, but only when he's right. When he's wrong, he's very quiet.
Sounds like somebody
very
I know.
Quiet.
And he's very familiar with the committee and what we do here.
Okay.
And has a big had a big hand in making us what we are today. So I like that would be my vote.
And I failed to mention Paul is actually chairman or president of the coalition where we do legislative activity in the state too. So he's very well connected. I've worked with him for a long time, and we're actually very fortunate to have three extremely solid candidates to choose from.
We do have solid candidates here. This is very nice. We never do.
So I don't know if do you guys have questions as folks who probably don't have a
whatever one you two feel is the best is kind of my opinion on the thing.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we, I don't know exactly how to do this. I make a motion that we accept the letter of interest from Paul Starin to join the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee in replace of David Schwartz, who will replace Randy West.
Do we want to couple the motion with my movement to the smaller?
Sure, we could do that.
Well, that's where I was going. But
yeah, right.
Okay. Stopped me.
Sorry.
Or you could do two separate ones.
Two separate. Let's do that one first, maybe. To
what, moving you?
At least have to go to the board.
Right.
Okay, then, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we accept David Schwartz as our Rules and Standards Committee member from a community of 400,000 people or less.
Second.
Very good. Any discussion on that? Is there any opposition? Do you want to talk about it?
It's Coconino County. I was just reading about that. It's just like, you know, how many counties in Arizona are going to meet that statute eventually?
I know.
I mean, because Maricopa's obviously out. Pima's out.
Even Pinal is probably
out. Yavapai is probably out, right?
Coconino County, mm-hmm. Arizona. I checked that not too long ago. I was surprised
how... The population of Coconino County, Arizona was 139,120.
Oh. Way smaller than I expected.
Yeah.
I thought...
I would have thought it would have been a lot more.
Same here.
My guess is we got a few more years up there.
Yeah, I think.
Thankfully.
Yeah, that's...
You should be off the board by the time the population...
Yeah.
I doubt it. Not the way we're moving.
Once they get their hooks in there.
Is there any opposition to the passage of the motion?
No.
Hearing none, the motion passes. Do we have it down correctly? Do you feel like, Kurt, we were joking and messing around? And
you know, I always re-listen to the minutes at a later time.
Okay.
To make sure I get the language.
Yeah, we'll recommend that the board appoint you
as the
committee member representative.
Population of 400,000 or less. Yeah. Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, did that motion pass?
Yes. Unanimous.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we accept the letter of intent, a letter of interest from Paul Starin to be a member of the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee in the place of David Schwartz.
Yes.
Is that the direction you want to go?
No, Randy West.
Well, all right, in place of Randy West.
Yeah, because Dave will be replacing Randy.
Yeah.
I had David replacing Randy.
Well, then you should probably make that change up there. Committee member representing residing residents replacing Randy West, and then...
This appears to be the way you get off the committee.
And then, yeah.
It's way confusing.
We need to replace. We're just adding them.
So then I make a motion to accept the letter of intent from Paul Starin as a member of the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee.
Second.
Is there any additional discussion? Hearing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Motion passes. Unanimously again. Okay, terrific. So that kind of takes care of that, I think. Now we're going to be at my favorite part.
Well, segueing into the director's report, I thought it would be nice if the committee would present a plaque to Randy for his at least 15 years of service. We've put in that request, and the plaque is being created. So do you want to present it at a future meeting, or do you want us just to mail it? What is your preference?
I don't know if he'd be game to come up, and you hate to spoil the surprise. I'd like to almost surprise him he might not go to ASCII meetings anymore.
He's getting out of the business completely.
How do you trap him?
Well, that's why I thought maybe if we mailed it,
maybe mail it.
Okay.
Or maybe there's a chance I could go deliver it or something, too.
Do you want to write a letter or something that joins with it?
Yeah, I'll do that, and then
okay.
I'll... maybe I could deliver it. That just seems a little more kind than...
Deliver it, take a selfie.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll put it in the newsletter. As a
that would
thank
be
you.
On your way to Cocochino, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Cocochino.
Okay, so Kurt ran all the numbers on our new computer system. We have 817 active home inspectors in Arizona. Applications are actually being processed much more quickly now that you all drummed up people to help review them. So
it's a slow time of year. As soon as March through July comes... when trouble arises.
Well, and then we can probably anticipate a need to perhaps put somebody on as a temp to review those applications. And that might be something Randy might be interested in doing for us.
Is that something where we want to develop some guidelines and or qualifications and a little bit of specification surrounding that?
Sure, if you want. I think we would... The guidance would be appropriate, but I think if we have someone in mind, like Randy, you guys would in all likelihood say he's qualified to review applications and recommend board action.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, okay. So if you want to think about qualifications, or we can take what you created for EAC membership, you know, where you said 5 years and so many inspections. And
that's probably appropriate.
The 5 years, 250 inspections has been appropriate so far for everything else. So
yeah.
I think that would be a good idea.
That was the peer reviewer requirements?
Peer review and parallel inspector.
Parallel inspector. Supervising parallel inspector, we don't have any. Oh, the new ones? Yeah. But as of right now. So my experience is that these changes legislatively don't get signed off till like August, which is going to crunch us this year. Does the board feel like it has the authority right now to hire somebody for this particular crunch period?
What do you mean?
As a contract reviewer?
Oh, for applications? Yeah, I mean, that's something I can do pursuant to my delegated procurement authority, as long as they're not going to earn more than $10,000, and as long as I can get them hired through a temp agency, then we're okay.
Okay, would I just... If I were to ask Randy about this, would I just tell him to contact you and all that financials are between you and him?
Yeah, and what he'd have to do is put his name and all that through one of the state-approved temporary agencies, and he'd become an employee of the temporary agency, and then we would request that he come on board as our temp for that specific purpose.
Would he contact you directly?
Yeah, he can.
Okay. And do you... want the committee's opinion of what the payment should be per review, or do you guys just have your standards for hiring somebody in that capacity, or do you want the input of us for what the value of that work is?
I'm happy to accept the input.
Okay. I think it's going to be a crunching numbers game more than input, though, David.
You have a lot of experience doing...
I think they're going to need to crunch numbers on how many there's going to be per year, what your budget is for that, bum, 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 paid accordingly. So I think that's more...
Yeah.
But each applicant needs to...
It's going to be an underpaid job no matter what it is.
Yeah, it's not going to be like $100 per application. We can't do that.
Right.
But
what is the number? 50 or something?
Well, 100 works for me, but...
As we've hired temps in the past for various jobs, we pay them hourly.
Hourly.
And I think that's what the temp agencies prefer because they have to pay employee-related expenses, including Social Security and, you know, all of that. So,
well, as attorneys, and I've done expert witness work, as we know full well, hourly pay can be trouble at times, too.
It's true.
So I don't know if there's an average of how long they take, and then we can apply an hourly number, and then I'm fearful of hourly, because then there's an incentive to bounce them back, and I don't know. It just creates...
Well, this is something we could talk about at the next meeting, if you want to make it an agenda item.
Okay.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
That's a good thought. So, future...
Okay. So there are 489 registered firms, home inspector firms. In December, we got 25 new applications, and over half of those have been processed already, so we only have 12 that are still open. We got 61 renewals, and we currently are investigating 19 complaints against home inspectors, 14 of which come from this fiscal year, starting in July, and then 5 remaining from 2017. So that's the numbers that Dave wants.
Yes. Is there more?
That's it.
How's the computer debacle going?
I didn't mention that. I was hoping you would.
Can't help myself.
Sorry, okay, so we're still talking with them about enforcements versus enhancements versus defects. And probably always will be. We are going from a yearly contract to a monthly contract to make certain that we get things delivered to us rather than waiting and waiting and waiting if they want to get paid, because procurement laws require delivery of a product before the state has to pay. So we're hoping that will provide them with more incentive to work on our requests for fixing defects. We are embarking on a pilot test program for renewals starting next week, probably Tuesday. We've picked 5 representatives from the Big 5, not home inspectors yet, to request that they go onto our special production environment and renew their licenses online, just to see how it works before we open it up to the larger population. Rob, who isn't here today but who has been pretty much spearheading this whole thing, is confident that it will work. There may be one or two glitches left for correction, but we won't know until we see those renewals coming in electronically. The Secretary of State and the Treasurer's Office are still holding open our special account to receive money electronically, so we want to make sure something happens. And our intent was to do it next week so I could tell the board on the 23rd that it's working or it isn't working. And if it isn't working, the renewal period for these Big 5 is for January 1 through March 30. So if it doesn't work next week, we still have some time to try a second test group and see how it works once they've corrected what we've learned from this first batch. We are still making renewals available the old-fashioned way, obviously, so people hopefully will be renewing and are renewing, but if we can encourage folks to try this online test and it works, then great, then we can open it up to the larger group. So, and one of my reasons for suggesting this is to control the number of testers to see what the mistakes might be, and we're trying it from the different professions because the programs for each are different. So,
we also will have rooms being able to do online.
Good.
Is there, those two go through, it's a huge thing.
Yeah. I think there probably would be folks interested in the home inspection world that what is the timetable to be listing what their record shows?
Oh, like the registrant search?
Yeah, like say disciplinary actions and all that.
That's a little further out. We want to make sure that they can get the renewals straight before we do any of the other what we call web applications. The registrant search, including orders, you know, board discipline and other interesting info about registrants, is still a ways off, and I don't know yet from the vendor when they'll be ready.
I noticed that as far as registrant search goes, it's very hard to find just the name.
Really?
On the website when I went in there. I tried to look up a home inspector, and I finally found him. And I tried to look myself up.
And you had trouble?
It used to be that we could hit and be right there, pick a discipline, and move
along.
Let's
see. Kurt just clicked on professional registrant search.
Okay. Yeah. Now, where was that? Go back, Kurt, if you can, to how you got there.
Is that the
home page?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the home page. Okay, okay, good.
So maybe we need to make that bigger. I don't know if we can.
Do you want the text bigger?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, okay. Maybe that'll work.
Okay. Then that would go to here.
And put me in
look
there.
Look up leads.
Yeah.
I don't know
about
okay. Let's just see that.
How about that?
Oh, what's that one mean? Nothing?
Maybe just one record.
Just one record.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So there you are.
Now, did you fix it where if you hit the back button up there, it actually does work?
I doubt
that. Oh,
nope.
Look at that.
Doesn't work.
Oh,
back to results.
Okay.
New search. Let's try Jason.
Yep.
Look at that.
Okay. Hey, look, I'm an alarm agent, too.
You are.
Wow. Awesome.
That is weird, for sure.
Why did the
alarm guy? So does that all look correct, Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your business address, right?
Yeah.
Will the process allow for folks to make corrections, not directly, but
yes, okay. In the when it becomes active, when the web app becomes active, you'll be able to go in and make your own address changes and hopefully pay for things with credit cards and, yeah, so.
Now, you had mentioned that there could be other interesting information. What did you mean by that?
Like if you were to search for a doctor, their website allows you to see not just the complaints and the board orders, but also where they went to school.
Achievements.
Where they did their residencies, you know, what their current work address is. I'm just not sure what GL, our vendor, is going to make available to us without having the enhancement argument with them yet. So.
The perennial.
Yeah. And it's been interesting sharing the pain with our state IT people because we're not the only agency that has had these issues with other vendors. And I think I told you guys about the Vital Records office.
Mm-hmm.
What a nightmare.
I think I've told that story now. That's just outrageous.
Yeah. So they've been really supportive, and actually both state procurement and the IT group from the state have been supportive of us and helping us with,
good.
Yeah. questions to ask the vendor and arguing with the vendor.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been good.
If you do run into trouble, email Kurt on what your experience was, because here we're sitting and it seems to work fine, but on your computer, maybe something different happened.
Maybe it's true.
Have to figure out why.
Maybe, or I might have overlooked that register and search.
Oh, okay.
Looking, because before it was one of the first things you saw when you got
okay. it. Okay. You want to plug in Dave? Should we see if it comes up? Make sure we spell his last name.
Make sure I'm still watching.
Wow, look at all those people
really
named Sports.
I'm in Santa Monica now.
You're in Santa Monica?
So yep.
You're an architect, too. That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome.
Multifaceted.
And that's your correct business address, right?
Yes.
Good.
Better change that.
Yeah, that's going to have to be changed.
Middle of nowhere.
Coconino.
Middle of nowhere.
You know,
it's
trouble
residing.
Getting mail up there.
Residing.
It's trouble getting mail up there because it's like a P.O. box. It's a P.O. box that I don't...
Just put your mailing address as your out in middle of nowhere address. Your business address.
Because you guys are in such detail that you guys go analyze whether...
Someone might look you up when this hits the...
That's
his address. Somebody who wants
and I'll go, whoops, I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Yeah. Brick.
It's been slow, but we're getting there. And actually, we have better functionality even with this than we did with our previous system
good.
When it was working at its height. So I don't want to give that up just because the vendor is being...
Yeah,
annoying. Thank you for that.
You won't find a better one. They're all annoying. Every one of them. Every touch
and,
to
consumer. You know, they lie when they bid these projects. They say, oh yeah, we can do that. Oh sure, no
they
problem.
All used to be
and,
yeah.
Contractors are
like we talked about in the board meeting, this isn't reinventing the wheel.
Right.
I mean, look at some other states. Go Colorado's and go, I want that.
Yeah, right.
That, just copy that.
Yeah.
It's already been done.
Yeah, you're right. Right.
Now, I don't see why this is such a big deal with these people. It's just like, you know, it's not like you're, you know, reinventing this code.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, part of their problem has been their difficulty in maintaining competent staff to do our work. So, you know, we worked with somebody for 6 months and then he left and they hired someone new who knew nothing about us and nothing about administrative law.
Mm.
And they sit down to try to type code for us and they don't know what we do or why we do it. And it's been
super fun.
Anyway.
Right. Anything else?
Thank you.
Did you want to say anything?
Any questions?
No. Nope.
All good.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Again, my favorite part. Next is the part I usually bag out of, but I wanted to just, because there's not a lot that comes up as we're going along, but I do take heat on occasion from folks out there that somehow realize that I'm involved here. So the things I hear are, the folks often feel like they don't get notification, and especially in a situation where they're delinquent or at risk, you know, and I don't know if you hear it too, you probably do, but...
We fixed it.
Really?
We have, starting in 2014, everybody was supposed to get renewal notices and delinquent notices. Came to realize a few months ago the staff person who was supposed to be doing it wasn't.
Oh my goodness.
They aren't here anymore.
Oops.
They have been caught, that's all been caught up. Everybody who was delinquent has gotten delinquent notices. Kurt's actually taken over the renewals and delinquent notices to make sure that they all go out on time.
Mr. Reliable.
He is.
And that will be probably, I was going to ask you guys, one of that monthly or quarterly. If monthly, I'll probably do that.
For the home inspectors, it should be monthly because they only have the 1 year registration.
And right now.
Yeah.
Right
now.
I guess my question is, I send out the renewal and say, next is February, so I sent that out, you know, end of December, beginning of January, and then this exact same address I'll be sending out the delinquency notice basically the month after. So
yeah, the problem is some of the registrants don't keep us informed of their address changes,
right.
Which I think is possibly why your initial registration was for a year, because of the movement within your profession. So hopefully, if this computer system goes live, it will make it easier for you to keep us informed about where you move and right. all that. But yeah, that's the problem we've been having, is we send out the renewal to the last known address of record. If it comes back and there's, you know, return to sender, addressee unknown, we don't have a new address to send it to.
And we're capturing email addresses from now on?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
I was going to tell you something that went out in my head. Oh, there was a glitch on the last Linkwit that went out. It grabbed some people that weren't the Linkwit. So we had a few calls from people going, oh my God, I'm not the Linkwit, I need this letter. Yeah.
That happened.
We think we've got that fixed.
Yeah.
Just how GL populates the...
Does that same process work with the firm registration? Because I know a lot of people drop the ball on that. Are there delinquent?
Are you going to be throwing out them? Because they don't need to renew. There's no occasion to sign when you have a delinquent.
Yeah, I guess we could set up a way to notify them that they're...
Say that again? They have to pay on that annually, right?
They do, but it's not technically a renewal. It's a new application every year.
No delinquency.
Just the way the statute was drafted. It's weird.
I think people that end up in an EAC meeting or hearing are often unaware that they needed to have that, and they're dinged for it. And I know at one point we increased the cost of that in order to pay for a mailing to let a notification to... Do they get, we do get that now. We get a notification to submit that every year, I believe. Okay.
We do send out a notice saying...
I thought that notices were going.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the delinquent notices are going.
Oh, down. True. Probably not delinquent. We
and
just
you
send
consider it not delinquent because
it's a new one.
It will expire, right? So it will be a new...
What about an expiration notification then? Or
we send that. What it is when they are... year is almost up, we send out a notice to the firm saying, apply for a new firm registration.
Okay.
But it's, we're
but
just
if
not
they,
calling
if
it
you
it.
Don't get one, if you don't receive it,
right.
you don't chase after them at all, right?
Right,
right. We give due notice to registrants by saying, you're delinquent if you practice, you're violating the law. But I don't think we've been doing it on firms.
We can look at it and make sure.
Do you do it, if you had an email address, do you do it by both email and snail mail?
We are doing snail mail.
Yeah, we don't have a...
The problem with email is people change them, so they're just so unreliable.
Yeah.
They change them. There's nothing in law that says they have to give us one or that they have to keep it updated. So...
I guess down the road, if we have them, though, I got an earful regarding why didn't I get, you guys have my email, you have my mailing address, why didn't I get one, both, you know?
Our grand plan is that once we get GL up and going, everything's good, to come up with a way to start notifying by email, but we need a way to make sure people know that it's going to go to email instead of snail mail. A system that they acknowledge, because what happened in the past is the board tried to switch to just email, no snail mail, and didn't tell anybody, and we ended up with a huge number of people who didn't know they were delinquent.
Because it ends up in spam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just goes off into cyberspace.
Yeah, I would think that both would be what they would prefer, if that's...
Would that be doable, or...?
It's possible. I mean, right now, I would say... You know, a great majority of people do not have email addresses with us, and then a good third of those email addresses do not work.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's like a period where the wrong space or misspelled, because we are the ones who would have to type it in, and if there's one little mistake, it doesn't work.
Right. Well, I mean, this would probably be an enhancement for them, but, you know, you should be able to opt in or opt out of getting paper stuff.
Right.
You know, just like you do any credit cards or anything else, you know. You give them your email address, they have to type it in. And then you check the box that I opt out of receiving paper.
Right. That's the plan we're going to try to put in place once everything's working.
Okay. Outstanding. The next thing I hear about is that people don't understand the complaint or EAC process. And to be honest, you know, as somebody who does some of those, we don't actually, especially now, now it's even further detached from the committee members' knowledge about what happens from there. And, you know, they'd love to hear it someday, but I don't know, you know, the inner workings of how you guys handle, how do you decide on the numbers of, for dollar numbers for consent agreements? And, or whether, I don't know, the details, they're just completely in the dark on it.
Well, Doug and some of his investigators are willing to go to ASHI meetings, I know I have as well, and answer questions about the enforcement process. So if it's a group that wants to know, we can schedule some time for Doug or one of his investigators to go out and explain the enforcement process. They can always call and inquire, and if there is a complaint that they've gotten, unfortunately, our investigators really do a pretty good job of explaining the process that they'll be involved in, so they understand how they can participate.
So your answer to them would be, you don't want to know.
Call Doug.
Yeah, and... I mean,
hopefully you will never find out.
Well, you have people who might have a complaint or a potential complaint, and then you have just the inquiring minds too.
Right. I know we answer a lot of questions like that regularly.
You take that.
There's the process right on the website.
Right, and it's in the rule.
There you go. On the website.
Teach them how to navigate.
How to read,
there.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to teach them how. One thing I don't understand about the process is on the severity ratings of 1 to 5, what are the consequences of 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5?
Well, again, the statute will say, here are your consequences. The board can revoke, suspend, probate, issue a letter of reprimand, penalties, after it's been established there is a violation. So it's really up to the board, and there are substantive policy statements that are published also on the website that will help people understand what the board can do. And then again, if they're involved in the process, they're invited to come to the meeting, argue their position to the board that they should receive a lower penalty or agree to whatever the board might recommend. So,
how often do you find folks do attend when their case is being heard?
Pretty regularly.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
At least every board meeting, we have maybe half a dozen or more that come and address the board, and even after they've signed a consent agreement, so they already know what the penalty will be, they come to the board just to see if the members will accept their signed consents or argue that the penalty is too high or whatever. So,
Well, now I know that the board is working off of staff's recommendations. For instance, if we have a 1, there might be a letter of concern recommended by staff, and the board thus gets to decide, right?
Right.
What does staff do? What are staff's recommendations on a 2, for instance, or on a 3?
Well, so this would be the ultimate material that goes before the board. Staff...
We have something worked out here.
Yeah.
Like a matrix on that?
Yeah, we do have a matrix. But, you know, the bottom line is we try to be consistent with what we offer as what the board's done in the past for a similar case.
And still allow for case by case.
Right. Right, so staff is really better at documenting factually what happened. And sometimes there are cases that come before the board with no staff recommendation because we may have gotten differing opinions from assessors, or there may be a severity rating that doesn't seem to jive, or we just don't know what the board might want to do. And then there are times where the staff will recommend a consent agreement be offered because the EAC and all the assessors say this case is definitely a violation of the Practice Act. So it's agendized for a consent agreement for discipline, and then the board members look at the material and say, oh, no, let's give them a letter of concern, or, you know, or this is really more serious and we want to send it for formal hearing so we can suspend or revoke. So
now, since I approached the severity ratings from a different angle, is this going to affect your matrix?
No, I don't think so. I mean, at the end of the day, it's
going to be the same.
What does the committee feel in terms of how severe this violation is?
Mm-hmm.
It's a 5 under the old and a 5 under the new. It's serious.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
And, you know, once you guys adopt this, we'll bring it to the board and it'll be published and out there for notice to the public so anyone can review it. Hopefully it'll make sense and be prepared. So the website really has a lot of information for folks. I understand it can be a challenge to navigate through it, but they can always call board staff and talk to someone who can answer specific questions.
In fact, so that would get published, that the
yeah,
list?
Yeah, I think so. It's
then I think it's
done.
Very critical to put something in there that, you know, during the EAC things can move up and down or something, because you could get someone to come in here and go, well, this is what I did, and
right.
Your rule says that this should only be a 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, I mean, if it's going to be a published document, mm-hmm. I think it definitely should say that this is just a guideline, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not set in stone, or
else
you get in trouble.
Obviously the intent of the committee is to do home inspection related work, but also to put it out there so the public you guys represent understands where you're coming from on these issues. So that's really our job as board staff, is to notice the public about trends and issues and concerns and all these things you guys discuss and work out here.
And then I have just a question out of my own curiosity, which historically, I can remember certain folks who were represented by an attorney,
mm-hmm.
the respondent, and just that process is designed to gather information from the respondent without the interference of an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair, and does that still go on to where, I don't know, do you allow the attorney to give an intro statement? What do you allow the attorney to do? I wouldn't accept the interference, you know what I mean? Is that okay for the board to,
well,
the committee to?
The way I look at it is if someone brings an attorney and the attorney advises them not to answer questions or take part in the informal investigative process, then they can take part in the formal process.
Mm.
But attorneys representing clients before the board really can't obstruct our process and make it impossible for us to investigate. I mean, they can, but legally, they either choose to work with us informally or we just proceed to formal hearing.
Okay.
In Enforcement Advisory Committee meetings early on, years ago, we used to read the attorneys in the lobby. Do we still do that?
No.
I can remember them being in the room, but we do.
He's like, what?
We hamstrung them.
We wouldn't let them speak. We did everything we could to shut them up. But
we
did notice.
Yeah.
I wasn't meaning to be funny.
No, I know you weren't.
I did notice that in the new rules, the informal
mm-hmm.
has come out. Okay, the EAC meetings, being an informal meeting, has come out of the new rules right here on our
Yeah,
computer.
Because the AG's office years ago basically advised boards that had a process similar to ours that it's actually, it is a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to invite the public in. There are portions of it that are confidential.
Right. Executive session. Yeah.
Executive session, mm-hmm. and also evidence gathering. So that would occur in an executive session.
Mm-hmm.
But when somebody comes with an attorney, you can't tell the lawyer to go sit in the lobby. Right.
What about during executive session?
Everyone's out of executive session.
When you're gathering evidence, the lawyer has a right to be there representing the client. because there are other considerations. You know, they could tell a client not to answer a question. We pose here at an administrative level because they may be thinking there'll be a criminal charge coming down the pike later on. And while we can infer a negative inference from them refusing to answer a question here, the same is not true in the criminal setting. In the criminal setting,
you mean civil, right?
Or civil?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, most of them come and they cooperate. Yeah.
It's funny. We do preemptively mention that, you know, thank you for being here, but we have to gather information,
right,
and this is not an opportunity to speak. And to tell a lawyer that they can't speak is like you guys are at risk of stroke in that kind of situation.
I've been pretty quiet this morning.
But no, you're very quiet.
Actually, it's a little nervous for the committee members, too.
It is.
When the lawyer
it can be pretty intimidating, not just for committee members, but for board members, too.
Yeah.
Not you, of course, but, you know, there are some board members.
Just tell them to go out and sit in the lobby.
I've come in the past to EAC.
Were you told to sit in the lobby?
No.
Okay.
But in my purpose for being there is sometimes a committee member may ask a question, and the client may think they're going down a certain road and start answering over here, and I might need to say, look, you need to address this issue with the committee and try to keep them on track and maybe say, remind them about X, Y, and Z as well. Because, you know, there may be some good stuff that they need to provide that if not specifically asked, they're not going to provide.
Right.
And then when it comes time for the conclusions, if I haven't done that, I'm like, why the hell didn't you mention these things? I think you'd be at a one instead of a four.
Right.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. But
good thought.
But Andy's a good lawyer.
Right.
I got to hope that for the most part they're not there to try to intimidate or...
No, they don't.
I mean, when it happens, we notice it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's pretty clear when it's bad.
There's some of them that are real above board and just trying to help, and there's other ones that are just trying to cloud the water and make it a mess.
Right. Yeah, but I do know, I mean, I know where you're coming from because I work with Ron too, and the former executive director was a police officer, and he really viewed the EAC meetings being like a police interrogation of a witness or suspect, and he felt that lawyers shouldn't be involved in that because that should be confidential. But he was advised before I started that the AG's office position on the issue was these were meetings. People were allowed to come in and take part in what was considered public, and he couldn't throw folks out. So, we tried to abide by that.
It was much more fun to run those folks. But... And I haven't seen lawyers come in and try to talk for their clients.
Well, but that they do try to answer.
Have they been?
Yeah.
You've got to be careful. Some of them.
Yeah, but our guys are polite, and they'll say, this is an opportunity for your client to explain what happened. And a lot of times, lawyers, well, at least good lawyers, should understand they might not know everything about home inspections, and it might be better if the client answers to resolve the case quickly and informally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all I had. Thanks for answering all that. Sorry it was so lengthy.
Four derogatory comments against lawyers today.
That's it?
You tried.
We have to watch the harassment.
Plots is revenge.
Once we go off mic, we'll get into some...
Yeah, we can help you reach your quota. We'll get you to your quota right off the record there. Let's see. So next is future agenda items, which we have 5 A, B, and C. And a new one to
talk about qualifications for potential temp.
And pay and proposed pay arrangement or something like that. If you want that input, just on.
Sure.
You want to use them as two separate ones, or you want to keep them in the same category?
I think it could be
qualifications and pay system?
Compensation.
Compensation?
Oh, because of the...
I think we could put it under one category.
Okay. It'd be a long discussion, but that'd be good.
Not necessarily, since you guys have already come up for qualifications for EAC members.
Oh, that's true.
Members,
yeah, that's easy.
Yeah, that's the easy part.
That's done.
Right?
Yeah, that one's easy.
Okay.
It might be two motions, if, I don't know, either way.
Yeah.
But if you want to...
We can work through it next meeting.
Agendize it as one, and I'm fine with that.
Doug has something, too, I'd like to bring to your attention and discuss. You know, we've got the law that people need to get their financial assurance within 60 days after they get licensed, but they're finding people aren't doing that. So just want to make you bounce around what the problem is and any ideas.
What should they, enter a new category as almost a delinquent type?
It's the way the law is written. It allows a 60-day window after registration as a home inspector to obtain the financial assurance. So what we're finding is that they'll go ahead and pay their fee and get their certificate, but at that time, it's because it's within that 60-day window, they're not required to provide financial assurance. And then they don't do it, and then we have to suspend their license. We did five in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. These are new grants.
But you spot them? You have a system to spot them every time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where's the problem?
That they're not providing the financial assurance.
Sounds like their problem to me.
Are noticing them, that they have 60 days.
Oh, we send them warning notices and whatnot. But our discussion is to try to coincide that initial registration with the financial assurance report.
Well, I think the reason it was staggered, correct me if I'm wrong, is because most of these financial assurance places, the bonding companies or wherever they go, need proof that they're actually registered
before
they'll
catch 22.
Issue the financial assurance.
I don't know how to work through it.
I know.
What?
So what's the ramifications when they get their suspension notice? Are they complaining about that? Or, I mean, if they're not getting their financial insurance and you immediately suspend, are you getting feedback? I mean, are they getting mad at you? Or?
They are either going to provide their financial assurance, and at that point they only have another 30 days before they get revoked, and that's the way the law is written.
Mm-hmm. But you would ideally like to get rid of the need to keep writing these notices that they're suspended.
Right. If we could make it so they're not even going to get their initial registration until that financial assurance is in place, that this problem goes away.
But I don't think you can.
Right.
Because no one's going to get financial insurance to some guy off the street that doesn't have a license.
Unless we delay.
It's already been granted by the board.
Right.
So that's in place.
Right.
But then they have to pay their fee to actually obtain the registration.
What if, is there a way to delay the license start date for 60 days? Say if you're going to license them today, they got a license, they go get their insurance, but their license doesn't take effect for 60 days or until that insurance is actually approved.
Or I was thinking what we could do is that, like right now I think it's 30 days after they've been granted, you just make it that 60 days and then they don't get their next 1 year unless they've got that financial insurance.
So. But I think that has to be a statute change.
Or a rule, something. Statute or rule might have to be changed to delay your license.
All right, so let's put that on to discuss it more thoroughly at the next meeting.
Well, if it's statutory change, then that's trouble, because...
I don't think it would be statute what we need to do. But I need to look at the... Doug brought it up to me this morning.
I don't understand why it's a problem, because they might not discover that they cannot get a bond and they cannot afford the E&O until they're very late. You know, they just got their license and they didn't take the time to discover what the costs are or the qualifications are for these things. And I don't understand why we're worried about it. It sounds like their problem to me.
That's a good point. Here we are thinking about babysitting.
Sounds like a them problem, not an us problem.
Okay.
I mean, they go out and we...
The us problem, though, is having to deal with all that.
Yeah, staff issue.
Well, and the other concern is that they're off and running doing home inspections.
Exactly.
That's what I'm worried about.
Right, yeah. And now all of a sudden they've lost their license already and somebody's used them as a home inspector.
Well, so there's nothing in the statute about...
They cannot do a home inspection until they have the financial insurance that's in there.
I'd be scared to death.
Right.
And then what happens is the financial insurance backdates to when they were registered, right?
Hmm.
I think that's what happens.
Anyway, I thought if we could put on the agenda, I can research the statute and rule and see.
Let's just put it on there. We'll talk about it next time.
Can you do that in an emergency fashion if it requires statutory change? Because we got a bill right now.
I don't think we'll need it.
Okay. All right. Very good.
But I can do it quickly. I can make it.
Okay. You're awesome. So how would we word that one? Like financial assurance.
Grace period.
122.02. It says, B, within 60 days after certification and before any fee-based home inspection is performed, a home inspector certified pursuant to this chapter shall file one of the following financial assurances pursuant to rules recommended by the committee and adopted by the board. So that's E&O or a bond.
Right. So it's in there.
Mm-hmm. It's in the statute.
Do you have any reason to believe these people were actually practicing?
We don't have evidence of that. But
does the notice big and boldly say you may not perform any home inspections without financial assurance?
That might be the best way of all about it, is just slap it on their back as they leave the office.
Or even make it a temporary issue somehow. Because by law, they can't actually practice.
Right.
Yeah, we'll look at it.
Did it, has it been going on all year, or did it just this one month had a freakish number?
Well, it seems like
a freakish number.
Yeah, it was kind of unusual this period. Going back the last couple of weeks, you know, all these people in a hurry to get certified, and here we are suspending them already because they don't have the financial assurance.
Let's try beefing up the notice to them after we grant.
I don't know what the grant notice looks like.
Let's look at it, Shelley. And
I think there's an operational way to deal with it.
And I don't know if there's ever a place for a phone call as well. Maybe that could be. If you guys didn't want to do it, that could be, you know, us, a person that is a temporary hire could also be involved, just notification by phone as well. Because that one's an urgent matter that they know.
Well,
you cannot do an inspection.
We send them written notice before we suspend it. We give them a warning.
Okay.
And there's a contact number on there. It's Andrew that handles this. And it's real clear in the notice, the warning notice, what's required and who to contact if they have questions.
I notice I'm looking at the occupations part of the licensing on our website. There's not very much information or any information regarding that, and that can be thrown in here.
Yeah,
maybe have Andrew's direct line. If you have questions about financial insurance, please call so-and-so. And the application, I don't think I saw any language about it in the application as well. Mm-hmm. Running through.
So we can just put more up front.
Good thought.
We could also issue a suspension with the license. Right away.
Save a step.
You're suspended until.
May I ask a question? In that situation, could you initiate the certification, the initial certification, for 60 days? Basically, compress the horizon, and then within that 60 days, you have to provide the proof of financial surety, and then it extends the date, or the date gets reset. So you set the goalpost, and once that 60 days is done, the expiration has occurred, and so it puts the onus on the person.
Sounds like an internal staff thing, but we'll go ahead and put it on the agenda too to make sure it's satisfactorily. You guys feel like you have all the input you need from us. Okay, outstanding. Thank you. What do we feel is there anything there that we want to make sure we're...
I'd like to get back on this severity rating as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So I'm all for next month if there's no objection.
So...
There was something else there that should come up quickly, too.
When's the board meeting in February?
I believe it's the
27th.
We do want to know whether that Patrice doesn't have to go to statutes. We want to know that for sure about that one change. So next month would be handy for that as well.
Yeah. We haven't made a new L&R meeting date yet as well. I think that was going to be for next month. Mm-hmm. We haven't chosen the date yet.
Did we get a list of board meeting dates for next
week? Yeah, we did.
Did I get it?
Probably you did. Not. You could have thrown it out, hoping you wouldn't have to be there.
No, that's probably ignored.
It's on the website as well, on your board meetings.
I don't look at the website because it doesn't work.
Hey.
Hey, you want it to work, that's an enhancement. If you want it to work.
It always works for Kurt. I just don't get it.
Kurt's like magic. He can do anything.
That's why we give him everything. Here, do this.
I can't find this weave.
Okay, what days do you guys want?
I cannot do the 8th, but I'm pretty flexible. I could do the 6th, 7th, or 13th, 14th, 15th, or something like that.
Wait, you can't do the 14th. It's February. No one should be away from their wife on the 14th.
Okay.
I'll tell my husband and stuff.
Wow, he's so romantic. Yeah. I would have never guessed.
It happens when you get older.
Yeah.
13th works for me. 20th works for me.
I'm on
13th?
Yeah,
man. Okay.
So how about you guys?
Next meeting will be same time, February 15th.
Okay.
15th? Or 13th?
Hopefully Tuesday. We'll have our 13th? New
yes.
person.
13th, 9:30.
Oh, yeah. So, oh.
You want to meet at 9:30? We did it for Randy.
I would do 9:30.
9:30?
Just traffic-wise, it's better, I think.
Okay.
And, is the notification process, if the board approves Paul Sterin, that would be this month, it is the mm-hmm. notification immediate that you would let Paul know?
To be here on the 13th?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want me to give him notice that he is being considered as
sure.
the top runner if you want to be present? What is that front runner? Although... it isn't looked at as bad if he doesn't come, right? Because I would have to give him fair warning that these meetings are disastrously long. And super interesting, though.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah, we can invite him to the board meeting and to the next meeting of the committee.
If he signs up on the sign-up sheet like they're supposed to, should get to him early in the
really?
Thing. And if he doesn't sign up, he'll sit back there the whole time to the very end. So.
What is the January meeting date?
23rd.
So Jan 23rd, and does it start at 9 or 9:30?
9 o'clock.
9.
January 23rd, 9 a.m. And our next, February 13th, 9:30. Okay. Very good. So we have our meeting set. We're all good with that. Date and time.
Yes.
We have one more.
Mr. Motion. Chairman, I'll make a motion that we adjourn.
We have a second?
Second.
I assume we do. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting is
Thank
adjourned
you,
at...